Today on Seculo, a coordinated campaign to remove the judge in the Trump classified documents case.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, so get them in today. We'll hit a bunch of different topics, but right off the bat, as you know, so after the Trump, you got the verdict from the jury, of course, last week in New York, and now we look at the other cases involving President Trump, and where do we go? Well, what about the Florida classified document case, which is basically in total legal limbo, especially after the special counsel's team was caught rearranging the classified documents that they took and saying, well, the way we found the documents is different than the way we are able to deliver the documents to the defense. Because as the defense team started looking at the documents, they said, wait, this doesn't add up. You say this document, we go to this section, but then we go to this section and the document's not there. So there was some issues there with even how the classified documents have been handled since they were in the possession of the FBI and then turned over to the special counsel. But remember, in this trial, throughout the entire period of time, there's been an attack, not just on President Trump, but on the judge in this case, Eileen Cannon. And in fact, interesting, the chief judge, Bill Pryor of the 11th Circuit, said that there are so many complaints and requests that he remove her from the classified documents case. And that's because there is a group on the, I guess a group of groups on the left that are putting together what appears to be an orchestrated campaign to remove her from this case because they don't like the delays. But of course, though, Will, we go right to these delays. These delays have been caused by, one, the fact that it's all about classified documents, so that makes everything take longer. But two, that the special counsel got caught rearranging the documents.
That's right. And the irony of ironies in this case is that the alleged crime here is mishandling of classified documents, and yet the special counsel's office themselves may be guilty, either in the court of public opinion or in reality, maybe not criminally, of rearranging and mishandling classified documents, as well as we found out from those filings that that staged photo of all the classified documents spread out on the floor at Mar-a-Lago, that those placeholder sheets were brought by the special counsel's office, by the FBI that did the raid, to place there so they could remove the documents so they could have a nice, pretty propaganda photo shoot before they release that to the public. That even that wasn't reality because they had put placeholders that said classified on it. But as you see, the left and their lawfare are going to continue. And in this case, now they're targeting the judge, over 1,000 complaints in just 1 week. And we'll get into some of the sources as we get ahead of where those complaints originated. It's kind of shocking.
Yeah, I mean, we will go through that. But again, this fact that all these complaints coming in to try to have her removed, this idea that, you know, what if we didn't have her as the judge, suddenly, you know, this case would be moving that much faster. The problem is when you're dealing with that many, is what they're saying is classified documents. This case we knew was going to be the case. It was going to be very tough to bring even before this summer. Or by the summer, because you've got to go through each document, then you've got to go through all these attorneys, they've got to get their different kinds of clearances to go through the documents. And so this going on, but again, the coordinated attack, lawfare, and I think what we've seen is the weaponization of the courts, it works both ways. You know what? It works in the sense that you could be like Alvin Bragg in New York, file these kind of ridiculous charges against Donald Trump to try to keep him off the campaign trail for 6 weeks in coma, convicted felon. But it also works, these attacks on judges. We've seen it against Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, and now Judge Cannon, and Bill Pryor saying this is obviously, who's the chief judge of the 11th Circuit, it's a coordinated campaign. Surprise, surprise, wonder how much George Soros and his team have provided, how many hundreds of millions to that campaign. We will take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. A big thank you, too, to those of you who became ACLJ champions last month. You got us to our goal on those final days. You got us to our goal. Thank you very much. We got a new petition on Israel. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Sign it today at ACLJ.org. Welcome back to Seculo, and we will get right back into, we'll take your calls on this too, because we talked about Lawfare targeting individuals, taking them to court. Donald Trump, the best example of that, kind of like at the highest level. We've been fighting back against the weaponization of the legal system and the bureaucracy against Americans. Really, when I say we go back to the pro-life protesters, we go back that we've represented, I mean, they're talking about 80s and early 90s. When we go to the Tea Party groups that were, again, targeted by the IRS and the FBI and DOJ. But then, you know, they learn from that is, hey, let's just go after the president and former president of the United States. That's who we've now weaponized to that level in our judicial process inside the United States. But there's a new move, too, which is don't just go after the president. Just go after a judge. And you're going after the judge not because of anything they've said prejudicial or, again, because because of their political views, even though I think that's part of it here. But you're going to say, this judge, I disagree with their moves on this case, so we're going to have a coordinated effort, and that's what we saw here. And we'll go to Harry Hutchinson because, Harry, what we saw is that Glenn Kirshner put together through his podcast, it was through MSNBC, but it has a podcast, a way to file a complaint with the 11th Circuit. And those on the left, if you give them a way to protest, they will follow it. And so they sent so many in that were so similar. Judge Pryor now, the chief judge of the 11th Circuit, has said, we're not accepting any more of these if they're just copy and paste.
Absolutely. And I think the judge is precisely correct. So the judge is reacting to the weaponization of the courts. Keep in mind that Mr. Kirshner was a former federal prosecutor, and he put together a podcast, and then he linked the podcast to a YouTube video, which essentially was a how to do a complaint video. And it provided a step-by-step approach to filing these complaints. So it is all a made-up job that represents the full weaponization of the courts. It's important to keep in mind that if you go back to the Trump conviction last week, that the third highest DOJ official stepped down from the Biden Justice Department to work in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office on the so-called hush money trial. So what we have seen since 2020, in my view, is a coordinated campaign to prevent the democratic process from operating. And one of the ways in which this approach takes place is to try to prevent Donald Trump from campaigning. And I think Kirshner is part and parcel of this effort.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Will, again, these kind of coordinated efforts to go after this judge, and this, I think, listen, we saw so many missteps by Jack Smith, and we saw the fact that they went in, you know, guns a-blazing or raiding Mar-a-Lago and
intent, you could authorization a use of deadly force in that case as well.
Right. I mean, remember, this was the initial action that took Donald Trump from, maybe I could go for that again, to put him right back at the top of basically get, I think that was the time when he secured the GOP nomination is when Mar-a-Lago was raided. And then since then, they've had to admit, which I mean, I have no idea how long this is ever going to take to be figured out. And hopefully he'll become president before they ever do and they can move on with this. I think it's so absurd since classification is a power for the president. And I do believe in the power of the president to be able to declassify whatever they choose to do so long as they are president of the United States at the time that they do it. But putting that aside, then they get all the records and the records don't match the bookkeeping. So when they provide it to the defense, I mean, there's thousands of pages of documents. The defense has nowhere to go. It doesn't match up.
That's right. And I think this, once again, this case is the prime example to show how many times the left holds a double standard when it's with their own or with a conservative, whether it be they're saying the president mishandled classified documents and they can't even handle classified documents appropriately, or even to this complaints against Judge Cannon that Glenn Kirshner put forward. the main complaints that they were sending to the appeals court was that she was delaying the case and had an improper motive. And Judge Pryor said, although many of the complaints allege an improper motive in delaying the case, the allegations are speculative and unsupported by any evidence. And it says the complaints also do not establish that Judge Cannon was required to recuse herself from the case because she was appointed by then President Trump. So they're complaining that she's delaying the case. However, they're saying send thousands of complaints to the appeals court so that they have to go through them all and maybe take her off the case. That's a delay tactic in and of itself. Yeah. Having a clerk and then all the lawyers and all the judges at the appeals court have to go through thousands of complaints that are sent in. We know that the wheels of justice turn slowly. The fact that they have to open these and go through them all, and that's why I think Judge Pryor did the right thing and said, listen, we're putting an end to this. We're not even going to read them if they appear to be similar in nature, because what Glenn Kirshner here has done is actually potentially delayed proceedings even further because of this coordinated effort. But when the left does it, totally fine. Totally fine.
Oh, of course. I mean, Harry, just to go back to this, it does seem like, I mean, you've got here, it's another way they can weaponize the legal system is to, we've seen the brutal attack pieces against Supreme Court justices, and now we see it against district court judges.
Absolutely. So if you look at Congressman Jamie Raskin, he essentially has told Chief Justice Roberts to force Clarence Thomas and Judge Justice Alito to recuse themselves with respect to anything having to do with Donald Trump. He doesn't have that power. And in fact, Congressman Raskin is violating the separation of powers provided by the United States Constitution. And if you look at what's going on with respect to this particular case, the complaints, the orchestrated campaign against Judge Cannon, we have a similar activity. In fact, if we follow the approach, as Will rightly points out, this further delays the trial. And so if Jack Smith believes that Judge Cannon should be recused, the proper venue is to file a motion with the courts, not to orchestrate a letter-writing campaign based on a YouTube video.
You know, I want to play this sound from Jamie Raskin because, again, you brought him up, Will, and I just to kind of take into account how they have tried to demonize this judge and the multi-step process and the weaponization. I'm going to say it over and over again. You call it lawfare, but lawfare is coming to the United States in a big way. It was here, but it's coming a big way now that it's being used against the president and federal court judges. Take a listen to Democrat Jamie Raskin.
This is like an Atlantic City mob understanding of people who go into federal or state courts as judges, that somebody owns them. And I think Trump's position is either he owns the judge, he controls the judge, he feels that way about Eileen Cannon, obviously, or they're someone who can't be trusted, they're a political enemy. The whole world is friend or foe, which of course is a fascist way of looking at things.
Fascist way of looking at things, Will.
They love language on the left, and they love demonizing people. However, there's been nothing that I've seen that this judge has done other than be a judge. And Logan brings it up all the time, is that they love to label judges they don't like by who appointed them. And they say Trump appointed judge as if that isn't the natural process for becoming a federal court judge. You can go through every federal court judge and apply that label, whether it be Clinton appointed judge, Bush appointed judge, Obama appointed judge. I don't know. There may be even some Carter appointed judges still around. It's probably on the line. But you're looking at this and you're saying you can't just label someone and try to make that as a pejorative thing on them by they were appointed by the president of the United States.
Right. I mean, listen, the whole thing has gotten it is getting out of control. I think we see that with the Bragg case. You're seeing that with the fact that the chief judge of the 11th Circuit is having to come out and say, you know, and by the way, has disagreed with Judge Cannon and some actions she's taken through the normal process you would go through if you felt like the judge had overstepped or not followed the right process. But so he's not trying to protect her because he agrees with every procedural decision she's taken. But the fact is that it's a clear, coordinated campaign with a bunch of people sitting in the exact same, copy and paste complaint in, telling her, telling the court to have her removed. Now, remember, I think what's very important, and we're going to talk about this with Secretary Pompeo coming up next, and with Jeff Balaban, who's in Israel as well. Israel continues to be under a brutal, orchestrated attack, both actually on the ground and legally. Israel, of course, was invaded. Constant bombardment of rockets. That hasn't stopped us as well. And now is facing the coordinated legal attack at the ICC. We're demanding the Biden Congress sanction the ICC, exposing the ICJ's legal attacks as well. And we're delivering a demand letter to the UN Security Council to defend Israel from these repeated acts. We want you to sign our petition to defend Israel today at aclj.org/sign. Welcome back to Secio. We are joined by, again, Senior Counselor for Global Affairs, former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. And Secretary Pompeo, before I get into Israel, I did want to get your reaction to last week, the verdict out of New York, out of the court there, with the jury finding President Trump guilty of those, of course, 34 misdemeanors, and then we think of some crime that we're not actually sure what that is.
Jordan, it was a sad day for America as someone who was a lawyer and someone who's now served in the executive branch and understands the absolute power of government, to watch it wielded in this way, in such a deeply politicized, wholly unlawful manner, just absolutely breaks my heart to see that America is in this place today. I'm confident the American people will respond to this in a way that's appropriate. And I think the vast majority of people recognize that this was a political hit job on President Trump. And I think they will demand that our government be better. And it must be. I was just back, Jordan. I think I visited 7 countries in 8 or 9 days. And every place I went, they were watching this. And they're confounded by how this happens in America. They can see that, tell me what the FEC is. Tell me what the crime is here. And it's almost impossible to describe to them unless you have like 45 minutes to walk through what Alvin Bragg did. This made America weaker abroad. It undermines for the next generation the trust and confidence in our central institutions. And it was a hit job on President Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I kept thinking the whole time, they have no idea, these prosecutors, because they're so Trump-obsessed, with the long-term consequences of what they're doing. I hope we can turn it around quickly. I have faith that the American voters can be the ones that send that signal. But then if this is the path we go down, they don't understand that, the world watches us, and it kind of vindicates their legal systems, which is basically, if you're in politics and have political power, then you kind of fall out of political power. Suddenly, this is what happens to you. You get criminally prosecuted. That becomes the norm. Those are countries we're usually lecturing, not countries that are usually looking and seeing the same thing happen to us right here in the United States. But I do want to get to Israel and what's happening there as well, because you've got a new piece up at aclj.org. Once again, Biden embarrasses America and helps the terrorists waste your taxpayer dollars with sinking Gaza pier. You talk about how that President Biden used the State of the Union to announce this aid pier. And since it has been constructed, Hamas has confiscated all the aid. We know that. And it's now breaking apart. So it's broken down. It's kind of the perfect case study for the ineffectiveness of Joe Biden's foreign policy.
There really is a broken down pier that never delivered a damn thing to help the innocent civilians in Gaza. It's the perfect exemplar of the Biden administration's policy in the Middle East. It's all about press releases. It's all about making someone happy in Michigan. And it is not remotely about winning for America, helping our ally be victorious in Israel, ensuring that they crush Hamas, ensuring that we actually deliver. If it's the case that you think there's not enough food for the civilians, fair enough. Actually get it there. Deliver it. Find a way. Don't use the terrorist elements that are inside of the UN World Relief Agency, UNRWA. Don't use a method that you certainly know is going to be confiscated by Hamas. Don't declare that you're for a ceasefire when you know that will leave Hamas in place. Those are the things that embolden our adversaries both our adversaries in the Middle East, in Hamas, and we can't forget that Hezbollah's got rockets pointed at Israel as well. But everyone in the world is watching. When they see American weakness, when they see this crazy idea that we're going to float up here and bring some food in, they all know it's a joke and it was designed for political domestic purposes. And they now can see the evidence of what you and I predicted. This will fail. It won't actually work for its intended purpose. And Hamas is both laughing and more powerful today as a result of those decisions the Biden administration made.
Yeah, I mean, we also have got this peace plan, which we were told by the Biden administration when they released it last week. Oh, this is Israel's plan. Then Israel finally said, this is not our plan. And it was a three-part plan. President Biden, you know, came out and did a whole press conference about it. What was your take, now that you've seen it for a few days, on this three-phase, very generic, I would say, you know, this is kind of like a plan. It reminded me of something you would get, not at like a PhD level, but maybe even like a first master's level class on like Middle East peace that you could put together. I mean, pretty simple. And of course, when we know something is it's not so simple there. And again, the fact that Israel immediately said, no, wait, this is not our plan either. It's just like, do they just throw this stuff out for a day, think everybody will write the story, then move on?
I think that must be it, Jordan. You remember, maybe it was a week and a half ago, 10 days, there's an announcement that Hamas had accepted a deal. And for 2.5 days, CNN and MSNBC ran around saying, oh, the Hamas has accepted a deal. Well, there was no deal. This is exactly the same thing. This proposal was no more going to get these hostages out. It was no more going to convince Hamas to give up their weapons. And in the end, those are the two objectives. Those are the things that have to happen for Israel to be secure. And frankly, for the Middle East to be more stable and prosperous as well. And so it was so odd, Kirby's statement that kept coming back, this is the Israeli plan, it's not our plan. They didn't want to be anywhere near it because they know, in fact, that this is a plan that would give Hamas power, put them back in control, and put Israel and the Middle East more at risk.
Yep. Yeah, labeling it Israel's plan, but they've actually rejected that label. So do you think that it actually was, just going back to that for everybody listening right now, do you think it was the Biden team trying to see if Israel would take ownership of a plan like this, or just seeing how Hamas would react to a plan like this? I mean, it's kind of scary that that might be the point that they're at in trying to get the remaining hostages out and trying to put it into this, like you said, actually getting aid to people in Gaza. But, you know, we've seen time and time again, a lot of missteps, a lot of problems and issues, talking about the peer in your piece, that it's just, they're just throwing anything out there to see if it just sticks at all. I mean, I haven't heard anything about from Hamas on this. I haven't heard all we've heard from the Israelis is this isn't ours.
Yeah. You know, Jordan, it's hard to explain other than diplomatic theater. Maybe that's your point, right? It is like showing that we're doing something right, so we can claim that we're for peace and we're for stability and we're not in the pocket of Prime Minister Netanyahu. But so odd, because it was destined to fail. And you can only run these cover stories for so long, and then eventually the truth bears out, just like the failure at the pier now has been proven to be a both a military and humanitarian assistance failure as well. You know, it's hard to know, Jordan. In the end, the Israelis are going to do the things that they need to do. I wish that America would not talk about we're going to deny them weapons and we're going to put restraints and they can't go into Rafah. Don't talk about the things the Israelis can't do. Talk about the things that Hamas and Iran can't do, and we will get more peace, more prosperity. We'll get more hostages home, and this will come to a conclusion more quickly.
You know, folks, I want you to go check out Secretary Pompeo's new piece up at ACLJ.org. Once again, the Biden administration embarrasses America, helps terrorists, and wastes your taxpayer dollars with the sinking Gaza pier. As always, we appreciate you, Mike, coming on and being part of a senior counsel for global affairs with us at the American Center for Law and Justice. Folks, this is, again, it's a critical time for us at the ACLJ. I want to encourage you first and thank all of you, just once again, if you're just hearing this now, who became an ACLJ champion last month. We hit our goal, and we actually exceeded our goal. And again, that is so important. So we appreciate all those ACLJ champions and all of you who are new ACLJ champions. We also want to encourage you, we're fighting for Israel, whether that's at the International Criminal Court, the International Court of Justice, or at the UN Security Council, where today we're delivering a demand letter to defend Israel from these repeated attacks at the UN. We want you to sign on and take action with us. Sign our petition to defend Israel today. Go to ACLJ.org/sign. Don't let this issue be forgotten. in the midst of all of the criminal trials and the statements about, you know, what happens next with Trump here or Fauci testified today. Don't forget about the conflicts ongoing. Go to ACLJ.org/.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We do have a lot of calls that have come in. And let me encourage you folks, you got calls about President Trump. If you have calls about any of the topics we've discussed today and kind of what happens next in the Trump legal world, what happens next in Israel, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. 3110. I will tell you the next segment of our broadcast will be going live to Israel. Jeff Balaban, who oversees the ACLJ Jerusalem, is there. So we'll get a live update about all these plans that are going around and what Israelis are actually seeing from their own government about whether or not any of these plans are really taken into, you know, having serious discussion about being utilized. But let's go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. Will, who do you go to first?
Let's go to Paul calling in Virginia on line one. Hey, Paul, you're on Seculo.
Hey, Paul.
Hi, this is, I am an ACLJ champion. I just want to mention that, and thank you for taking my call. My question is, I understand the governor of New York can pardon President Trump, or former President Trump, and in consideration of the damage that this conviction does to the presidency, to the office of the president, to the country, what is more important? Is it more important to alleviate that damage or to pardon Trump and or not pardon Trump and just let that conviction stand?
Let me tell you something. The Democrat governor of New York is not going to pardon Donald Trump. I mean, Will, not only, you know, she's attacked people who even show up at rallies for Donald Trump. So the fact is, she might try to temper some of her language, like when these cases have come out. But honestly, I mean, she's gone after President Trump and his supporters.
That's right. And Logan's favorite thing on this broadcast was the clowns, because we've been having many of you putting the clown emojis in the chat since this because of the governor of New York calling the people that would show up to a rally the clowns. And do we have that bite? Let's go ahead and play it so people can hear who Paul, unfortunately, I don't think that this governor who would say this is the one that's going to pardon him. Let's play it.
Well, I'll tell you, it won't make a difference at all, Jake, and that is for Donald Trump to be the ringleader of and invite all his clowns to a place like the Bronx.
That's right. Invite all the clowns. So, I mean, Logan's not here, but if you're here, we could see some clowns going today. It's right, normally his thing. But, I don't think that, unfortunately, I don't think the governor of New York is going to see what could be better for the country in this situation and pardon him.
But a different kind of governor, a different place, and that's why they're strategically going to file, of course could. So in most states, the governor would have that power on these state charges. Now, weirdly here, would be interesting here if it did happen was, well, but if it was was what made it a felony actually federal, which even though the DA is not supposed to be able to use federal law, in fact, the Supreme Court's been very clear about that. The legal system's very clear on that about local DAs. So could the governor then actually issue the pardon because it was a federal issue fortunately, we don't have to worry about that in New York because there's no pardon going. Now, I did want to address True because I think it's important to do that right now. We've got about a minute before we go to our next segment of the broadcast. Is a lot of people say, can you go right to the U.S. Supreme Court? And our answer, our analysis is, while you can sometimes try and do that and take these emergency appeals, that likely if you've listened closely to leaders like Speaker Johnson and others who say the Supreme Court may ultimately have to get involved, they say that that's a long process. You first have got to go through and exhaust your ability to appeal in New York. And then after you've done that and gone through the entire New York system, and there's two more stages to that for President Trump, you then could make that appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, which may be the first court that will hear this potentially that's honest and that would hear it openly and it could see kind of down the road past Donald Trump a little bit better than these lower courts have been able to do. Remember to go to aclj.org/side, stand with Israel, and thank you for becoming an ACLJ champion and exceeding that goal for us last month. We'll be right back on Seculum. Seculum, we are taking your calls today, 1-800-684-3110. We have a lot of calls, and I promise if we don't get them to this segment, in our final segment, which is coming up next, we're going to get to all of those calls. So for Phil, Bill, Lynn, and Jeff, definitely hang on the line. We will go in the order that you've called in. So Bill, you will be up first. But I want to go to Jeff Balaban, who oversees ACLJ Jerusalem. And Jeff, first to ask you about this proposal that we saw after Joe Biden's speech last week, where, again, we thought, hey, maybe this is going to be something substantive, get those remaining hostages home. And we go through the phases, and even in the phases, you don't even have all of the hostages released in phase one, and you don't really have an end to the conflict in phase two, maybe at some point in phase two. But they did try to say this was Israel's plan, and then Israel said, wait, this was not a plan that we have adopted at all. So, you know, an interesting move by the Biden team to have him come out and announce that they've got this plan that neither side, Hamas or Israel, is really interested.
That's right, Jordan. This plan is a non-starter. The plan's not even a plan, as you point out. It's just some vague outline of a set of ideas. And by the way, even those ideas are anathema to most Israelis, which is to say, the notion that Israel gets the hostages and their bodies, and then Hamas in exchange gets untold billions and billions and billions of dollars and thousands more, hundreds of thousands more terrorists and control of Gaza. So basically, Hamas gets to, not just Hamas, it's honestly, it's the Gazans, because it was Hamas plus, get to invade Israel, wreak unbelievable horror and damage on Israel, walk out, and then America's going to come in and save them. This is a non-starter. It's totally, it's not just that it's ineffective, it's deeply offensive. And basically, America is trying to break Netanyahu's arm in order to force him to do this.
Jeff, was there any reaction to people in Israel on this plan? I mean, I know that the idea is that I'm sure most Israelis would love to get these hostages back and see a path towards a ceasefire. But I don't think that, I think they're also, they live in a new reality since October 7th. About how dangerous who they're dealing with is right across their border to the west, and that they've got to make sure if they sign any kind of ceasefire at all or get involved in any kind of agreement that Hamas has really been truly demilitarized, which here doesn't even happen until phase two. But as the Israeli on the street, do they take any of these proposals seriously?
It's great that you asked the Israeli on the street question, because I spent a lot of time when I'm here exactly asking those questions. Because, you know, we talk to the political class, obviously, and to security and military. But also, it's very important to understand what the street feels like, what the base feels like. I have heard nothing but disdain for this and nothing but, you know, they may have passed the point of no return. First, they were hopeful that Biden might be a friend. They thought, you know, America's a friend. Now, it took months of total disconnect between what is Biden doing? Isn't America our friend? Don't they understand what Israel's going through, what Israel's gone through, and what are they trying to demand here? Also, don't they understand that Israel is doing, as it always does, whatever it can to protect civilians and noncombatants? Why is the White House condemning Israel nonstop and wagging their finger? There's a sense of absolute dismay and disdain for the current resident of the White House here in Israel.
Yeah, I look at this, I say, you know what? This can't be all that we bring to the table. And then if it is, Jeff, I mean, it's no wonder that we have not gotten a ceasefire yet. If it's taken them 6 months to get them to these generic three phases in their generic talking points.
By the way, and let's again put it in context. By the way, if you went out in the street today, if Israel got to elect the president of the United States, it would be Donald Trump, you know, blowing through every possible record, because they know exactly what it was like here just moments ago, just a couple of years ago, when peace was breaking out, warm, true peace with Arab nations that had never talked to Israel before publicly. And all of a sudden, there's global calls for jihad, global calls for genocide. Israel's being turned into a pariah because what? It endured the most horrific attack against Jews since the Holocaust. And they recognize this really falls down to who sits in the White House and how the White House has turned its back on Israel. They like to use the language of being a friend of Israel, but on every possible occasion, they stab Israel in the back, and everyone here feels that.
Jeff, to me, this almost feels like Biden's Egypt moment, because a few weeks ago, we saw a proposal that got widely touted that Hamas had agreed to a ceasefire. It was an Egypt brokered plan. And then when it comes down to it, it was that the language that Egypt said that Hamas agreed to wasn't the language that was even given to Hamas. And everyone saw it as a kind of a blunder on the world stage by the Egyptians and their diplomacy with Hamas, which is hard to even fathom that those words are coming out of my mouth. But when you look at this, and Al Jazeera is reporting that Hamas stated on Friday that it views the proposals positively. And so now you have a Biden plan that he is going to the world and saying, this is Israel. It's not us. I'm putting forward Israel's plan. Israel's rejecting it, saying that's not our plan. And Hamas is viewing it favorably. It feels, one, like they're following the Egyptian diplomatic playbook, which doesn't end up too well. But also, it makes you wonder, whose plan is it?
Well, that's exactly the question. Here's one thing we know, Will. It's not Israel's plan. And the fact that it's not Israel's plan should itself be devastating to anyone who is a supporter of Israel. Israel's gone through the darkest possible days. Israel continue to live, honestly, daily in hell. As strong as the people are here, no family has been untouched by the tragedies. No family is untouched by the trauma. People are still in reserves endlessly. Families are still, you know, away from their homes now for months and months on end. This is a country truly at war and truly in pain because it's being turned into pariah. What its allies should be doing is standing by it and saying, what do you need, Israel, to be safe and secure and prosperous and to re-enter peace and strength the way you were just a few years ago? Instead, we have Biden over and over again, whether it's for domestic policy reasons, which is outrageous, or it's because of ideological reasons, which is evil. They're basically really trying to break Israel. And it's there's no real hope here for a positive conclusion so long as the current residents of the White House occupies the White House.
I think it's also, Jeff, getting more and more difficult. You know, we just sent letters to Norway, Spain, and Ireland, and their representatives at the United Nations, because they have all started to endorse a Palestinian state. And we talk about our letter how it is making it more difficult to actually ever get to that point for Palestinians by doing it during the middle of these conflicts when Hamas controls such a large swath of, I guess you put in quotes, Palestinian territory like the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly. I mean, the truth is, remember, the Biden administration, they talked about this also as though their big plan after October 7th was to create a Palestinian state, which is a nice way of saying ripping up the most valuable, important, strategically necessary territory and creating a Gaza that's 10 times as big, 10 times more powerful, 10 times more dangerous on Israel's most sensitive border. So it's a non-starter. And yet these other nations are now exactly rewarding the people who committed those atrocities on October 7th. That's what it means to give a Palestinian state. We reward terror. And the fact that they're doing it is such a moral blot. It's really, honestly, like you're sitting there in 1940 and deciding, we love the idea that Hitler has for the Jews. We're all in on that. It's really not different than that. There's now just a state of Israel to throw to the wolves as opposed to individual, you know, Jews living throughout Europe.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff, as always, we appreciate your insight coming in from Israel. Just a final question for you real quick. We're getting polls out of Israel right now. We've seen the talk from President Biden about Netanyahu. We've seen that also coming from Senator Schumer. But he's also been asked to address a joint session of Congress that includes Chuck Schumer putting forward that request with Speaker Johnson. So, I mean, again, it looks like we'll have him here again. But I think it's just important for our listeners to understand how important the United States is for Israel when Israel is under attack.
There is no place on earth, there's no nation on earth that is more important to the state of Israel than the United States of America. And it makes sense. Obviously, we are two nations that were created with very similar ideas. The United States of America, built truly on a Judeo-Christian heritage that finds its concretization, its realization in the state of Israel. And the idea of freedom and individual liberty, and it all comes from here. And the rest of the world that turns against it, well, it's because they hate exactly those ideas. They don't like America either. That's why those who hoist the Palestinian flag burn the American flag. And so, yes, this is an alliance which we hoped wouldn't be broken, but the current occupant of the White House is doing everything it can to break it. It has to be restored. It must be restored for Israel's sake, but also for America's sake.
Jeff, as always, we appreciate all the work that you're doing in Israel and around the world. Jeff Balaban oversees as a senior counsel. ACLJ Jerusalem, he comes to us live today from Jerusalem. And as you know, Israel continues to be under actual attack and also attack at the United Nations, attack by in the legal system, as we call it, lawfare, the weaponization of international legal systems from the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, and of course, at the United Nations. We're demanding that Joe Biden and Congress sanction the ICC. We're exposing the ICJ's legal attacks on Israel. And today we're delivering a demand letter to the UN Security Council to defend Israel from these repeated attacks. We want you to take a minute, just a minute of your time, and sign our petition at aclj.org/sign. That's aclj.org/sign. Our new petition to defend Israel today. That's aclj.org/sign. When we come back, we take your phone calls. All right, welcome back to Secular. In our final segment, we take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We'll go right to those in just a second, but I want to thank all of you who became ACLJ champions last month. That's it. Again, those are those of you who signed up to become recurring automatic donors each month. We surpassed our goal by the end of Friday, and I wanted to, again, just say thank you to our ACLJ champions. If you're interested in checking that out, go to aclj.org/champions. Will, let's go to the phones.
That's right. We are going to go in the order of which you've been holding. So we're going to start with Bill in Wyoming on line two. Bill, you're on Seculo.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try and be as polite as possible because I'm really upset about the fact of what's been going on, what I've learned about the classified documents with Jack Smith,
yep,
and comparing that to what's been going on with a, quote, air quote, hush money against President Trump, that the DAs and judge are very vocal as well as public about persecuting, prosecuting, however you want to call it,
and a little bit of
this trial against former President Trump. It really upsets me.
Yeah. Well, I think this is what we have to realize. You've got Jack Smith on the federal side. His case in D.C. right now, Will, that's on hold because the U.S. Supreme Court is going to decide what level of immunity does the president have when it comes to, you know, his official acts. And I think where that case is going is likely back to lower courts to determine where how do you strictly define official acts for the purposes of these post-presidential prosecutions, if you will. So what is it privileged? What wasn't covered by presidential immunity? For instance, I don't think any president should be charged with a military decision that they made that went wrong. If they were, you know, they're acting in the best faith. They take their advisor's advice. Some may say this, other advisors say this. They choose one of the actions to take, and things don't always go perfectly. I don't think they should get criminally charged. I don't think a liberal who told you the whole time they want to raise your taxes should be charged criminally because they end up signing a piece of legislation that raises our taxes. But what I am concerned about, Will, is that it becomes the norm in our country. We're seeing that from some Republicans. That's why I would like people to take a step back and say, let's not make this the norm in the United States of America.
Well, and I think one good example is a case that we worked on here at the ACLJ, which was the Colorado ballot access case. And so we knew that it would be a battle and that if we played it right and by the law in the court system, that we would be successful at the end of the day. And there are many that wanted to then utilize the same issues that were brought up in the lower courts in the state system of Colorado and say, okay, well, now let's flip that and let's use it on Joe Biden. But we knew that we wanted to preserve the Democratic Republic that we have. We wanted the rule of law to succeed. And so that's why groups like the ACLJ, we represented the Republican Party of Colorado that was a party to that case, and we took it all the way from district court at the state level through the Supreme Court of Colorado to the United States Supreme Court on expedited basis, and we're successful. We had a victory in that, where we were saying, look, there are rules in America. There are regulations, and the state a Secretary of State of Colorado can't just do this willy-nilly. Now, that's where a lot of people point to what's going on in New York, that it was such a novel legal idea that Alvin Bragg conjured up to be able to go after the former president, that even at the appeals level within New York, it may not even have to go to the state Supreme Court before there's an overturning of the conviction. Now, I'm sure that there are other issues that can come out of that, but there's a good chance even at the next level we could start to see justice, just because even Eli Honig on CNN or on MSNBC, you're seeing commentators say, this doesn't, now they may have presented a better case to a jury to get what they wanted, but we're not so certain that they had the best grasp of the law when they got
it in front of a judge.
Exactly.
And see,
exactly.
That's what happens at the next level of these appeals, which is about a month away, a little bit less than a month away now. In July 13th, I think is the, because July 11th is the sitting, and I think they have a July 13th to file their notice of appeal. Then the appellate division of New York, that's the second level in New York, will tell them when their briefs are due. And that could be 30 days, 60 days. I mean, you could see this could go, again, past the election before this has been figured out. It might not. I mean, they might actually speed it up some. We'll take more calls, though, because we got a lot of calls related to how this works through the judicial system.
Let's go to Phil in New York on line one real quick, and this is about the actual convention itself.
Hey, Phil.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Don't get me wrong when I ask this. I'm a fervent supporter of Donald Trump. However, the question now becomes relevant. If he can't run in November, will Nikki Haley automatically become the Republican candidate?
No, the person who came in second place when it comes to delegates doesn't automatically become the candidate. What happened, or what would happen, Will, is you'd have a very lively Republican convention where you, which used to be how they were in the past, where you'd have a few days and these people would determine, delegates would determine then who they ultimately want to nominate. Again, that's a what-if scenario, because Donald Trump could run here even if he's fully convicted on appeal.
That's right, and even according to a lot of the laws and state laws, it doesn't even look like he would necessarily lose his right to vote because of the New York laws, and even though Florida, they normally defer to the other state you're convicted in.
Right.
So it doesn't look like that's a likely scenario, but I do see a lot of people in the op-ed class that are trying to pontificate that. Let's go ahead and go to Jeff in California on line four. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I haven't heard any legal analyst mention this. Where did the New York City Trump prosecution introduce evidence into the record that here's the federal election law that Trump violated, and here's how he violated?
Yeah, no, all they generally said was he's either violated state election law, federal election law, and what that would be is that you didn't report the funds the correct way. That's all I can figure out for them, is that, you know, you've got to when you run your campaign, you've got to file correctly with the Federal Election Commission. So if you put something down as a legal expense, and it was a campaign expense, that may be more than you're allowed to give or to write that way, then you might get some FEC issues with fines. What we haven't seen before is this isn't FEC issues with fines. This is talking about criminal prosecutions and putting someone behind bars.
Yeah, let's try to get one more call in. Lynn, quickly, we've only got about a minute left. You're on the air.
Hey, Lynn.
Yes, you may have already answered my question, but I'm wondering if there isn't something the GOP or Congress can do to the DOJ to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court to stop all of these usurping, manipulating lawsuits that are going on during a voting year, because it seems to me that it's completely taking due process off its course, rules of procedure off of its course. It's beyond frivolous, and it's crippling this nation.
Remember, though, they got a guilty verdict. I agree with everything you're saying, but they went to 12 jurors. They chose those 12 jurors with the Trump attorneys, and they got a guilty verdict. When I say they, I mean the left. So what we have to do is fight legally. Now, can we establish ultimately a precedent that this is not a viable option? Yes. But I think that's going to be, well, probably multiple lines of different court cases.
That's right.
Probably from the state into the federal courts as well.
That's right. And it's not going to be quick. It probably will not happen this year in the election year. So
this is probably the only case we're going to see a resolution to. at all. And even that, we're not seeing the resolution because now it's going to be on appeal, and that will be on appeal long after people vote in November. Support the work of the ACLJ. Sign that petition for Israel at aclj.org/sign.